Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
You're now listening to The Jillian Michaels Show.
I'm not very proud opening up the show today. I had Heidi and I had a massive parenting fail.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I bring it up because, honestly, we had no idea. We had no idea we were doing things in this particular situation, which I'll explain in a moment, wrong. And the only way we knew is because we had the luxury of a family therapist who we've had to hire to help us navigate our different parenting strategies. But thank God, because there's so, I don't know how, truthfully, how people do this job. Because there is, unless you are a therapist or a family therapist, how are you supposed to know these things? And I the reason I want to do this segment is because I think, A, as a parent, when we make mistakes, 9 times out of 10, they are just misguided.
Yes.
Misguided positive intentions.
Yeah.
And if you don't have kids, as a child, obviously, as a human being who had 2 parents, I think it's important to hear this little story of mine and go, okay, you know, some of those mistakes that my parents may have made in my life were just truly misguided, a complete and utter lack of knowledge. So recently, Lou's in several activities, right? We've got her in horseback riding. Mm-hmm. We've got her in dance. We've got her in gymnastics. Heidi wanted to get her in soccer. She wasn't interested. So anyway, she used to love dance. She used to love gymnastics. And, you know, the horse thing is still okay because it's just her and our horse trainer, Lisa, who she's known forever, and her little pony. But anyway, as of late, it has become an apocalypse every time we try to take her to one of these after-school activities. And I mean, hysterical crying,
wow.
Sulking, pouting, screaming, clinging to me, Heidi, the nanny, her aunt, whoever's happening to take her. And Heidi was like, I don't want her to think, like, I want her to be able to follow through. You know, I want her to, like, so I think she's just afraid. We've got to force her to confront her fears. And I was totally on board with this. I was like, you're right. We should make her kind of confront this. Mm. Not in like a get out there, you're on your own way, but like a, you got to do this. Everything's going to be okay. See that it's not the end of the world. But it got to the point where also, oh, another thing. Every 5 seconds, it was, look at me, 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 look at, to the point that you were just, you couldn't have a conversation. You couldn't do anything. She always was like, look at my handstand, look at my handstand, look at my, I mean, you started to just feel like you were unraveling because like I couldn't get dinner ready. I couldn't have a conversation with Heidi. I couldn't take a phone call, nothing. And it also became a scenario with Phoenix where Phoenix was always bad, and she was always pointing out how bad Phoenix was. So it was like, Phoenix broke this. Every time we would come home, we would get a report. Like, she's like, I tried. She one time actually packed her bag and tried to leave. We weren't there. My sister-in-law, Heather, I was staying, was relieving Hallie. We were shooting something, and my sister-in-law was relieving the nanny before we could get home because it was kind of a long day and it happened to be on a Sunday. And so my sister-in-law was like, Lou has just tried to move out. Because, and when I got home, she was like, Phoenix hit me and then he threw my shoes in the pool and then he smacked. And like, we get this kind of recount of like everything Phoenix has done wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's like, aren't I good? Isn't he bad? And Heidi was getting really upset because she's like, I don't want Phoenix to always hear he's a bad kid. So I was like, honey, this is way out of my league. I don't even begin to know how to deal with this. Okay, this is... Let's bring it to Susan, who's our family therapist. Mm-hmm. So we go in and we start telling Susan and we're kind of recounting a little bit about Lou's history and Lou's background. And everybody knows she's adopted. But I mean, I don't think it takes a genius to know if a child is adopted from a third world country, conditions for that child prior to the adoption were obviously pretty not great.
Yes.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. So pretty not great. So we kind of start going through the whole thing and we're like, but we're trying to get her to go. And you know, we want her to deal with this and she needs to kind of toughen it. And it turns out we have made all of the wrong mistakes. And so she thinks it's a series of things because I've had to travel more. So she thinks it's brought up some anxiety for Lou. She thinks that also, you know, in dance, I hate to say this, which is a whole nother segment, but all the kids are these little white blonde kids.
Yeah.
And one, you know, they look at her and Heidi feels like there's something going on there. And she thinks it's making Lou uncomfortable.
Oh, gosh.
In addition, the therapist thinks that it's creating this anxiety for her because she feels like Lou missed out on 2 years of physically being held. And she also thinks that the situation with Phoenix, and here's what's amazing, and I ask all of you women out there to really pay attention to this. Women are always the first to comment on little kids, and the ones they always comment on are the little boys. My God, he is gorgeous. He is just so yummy. I could just eat him right up. How do you stand? How cute he is. And my daughter's standing
right there.
I mean, it happens. And so I started pointing it out to Heidi over the course of a weekend, and there must have been 10 people. Oh my, he is, look at him. He is so, he's gorgeous.
Is that just because he's the littler one?
There's that. And I just think there are a lot of women out there, and I hear this a lot, that are always like, oh, I just want boys.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want a girl. And which is so upsetting to me. And I think women are programmed from an evolutionary perspective to see other women as competition. Because if you think, historically speaking, survival was what man's going to take care of me, there's just that horrible competition that's been ingrained in many, not all, but many women. And I think that, like, they want boys, they want sons, they always gravitate towards the little boy. I very rarely see women go up to little girls and go, she's stunning. And I will say, my daughter's a good-looking kid. Yeah. I'm sorry. Bottom line, her body's insane. The kid is like, it's just ridiculous, her body. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, she's got these crazy full lips, this perfect skin, giant eyes. I mean, she's beautiful. She really is. The kid is like a black Bo Derek, and no one stops to go, God, she's exquisite looking.
What?
See, no. I don't get that. Or, wow, she's brilliant. Her manners are impeccable. The child will say, thank you. It's a pleasure. She's four. It's a pleasure to meet you. And people are impressed, but they're not like, what a lovely child. Or how smart. No, it's always how cute he is. And so this therapist was like, you guys, if she doesn't want to go, you know what? She doesn't need more activities with more kids. Don't we think she's gotten enough group? Because remember, this is a child that it lived in an orphanage for the first 2 years of her life where she didn't get help, she didn't get that personal attention. And she thinks that these group environments are creating anxiety for her, that the need to perform to get attention. And like, she's like, she needs to just be bonded right now. If she doesn't want to go, you need to stop. And we both were like, you know, ding ding ding, like the light bulb went off. Right. But I was like, oh my God.
Wow.
She's right.
And she said to Heidi and I, she's like, you know what? they'll look at me, look at me, look at me. She's like, what you guys need to do is, you know, more so I think part of it is that Phoenix is so bonded with Heidi that he tends to dominate her. Heidi, dominate her as in like all her time. And she's like, you need to just take Lou separately mm-hmm. at times where she doesn't have to constantly compete because he's so hard to compete with because he's little and everybody. And so the next day when Lou was supposed to have dance, Heidi showed up at school and picked her up and said, do you want to go to dance today? And she said, no. And she said, okay. Let's go do something together this afternoon. And like, she took
Lou. Oh, amazing.
Isn't that so? But like,
sweet. I love that.
And Lou was so happy. So
that's
happy.
What she wanted.
And that's like, but we didn't know.
It's hard though to.
That's okay.
It's hard to read the intricacies though when you think you're providing and you want to expose them and you
yes.
want to do this litany of things and you want to overschedule them to have
yes.
this stim and opportunity, and we've been caught up doing that too, and then all of a sudden you realize or it comes to be known that it doesn't work. You get right. actually it has a consequence.
With Jack, you mean?
With Jack, yes.
Jack is so to give a little history. Yes. Jack is Andy's her son, but her technical stepson.
Yeah,
he's 8 now. Yeah,
yep, turning 9, and we've decided over schedule and book with other parents, and
yep.
all of a sudden, and then you realize like he kind of wants the nuclear bud.
Yes.
And he's also had a transition with me being, you know, new on the scene in the last couple of years as his stepmommy and stuff. And he wants that. And so with the baby coming, he will even ask us, will I still have time with you guys?
Oh, wow.
So we've said, yeah, of course you go on dates with your kids. But
you
unless
do.
We read
you do.
That, I had to read that. Mm. In my mind, it was going to be the perfect nuclear family where I was going to have this baby daughter and him. And then it would be... this kumbaya moments, but it isn't. Like in the books that I've read, you segregate your kids and you take them on and you acknowledge them, and I wouldn't have even
thought
of that.
This has been so hard for Heidi because she always wants us to do everything as a family because that's how
yeah.
she was raised. And
I thought that too.
And I was like, honey, I don't think this is actually the best thing for them. And by the way, it's hard for me to bond with Phoenix when she's around
mm-hmm.
because he's always going to default to her because she's the sort of softer one. So then like yesterday I picked him up from school and he came running over to me and we went horseback riding.
Awesome.
And then there's a falconer to school and I hired the guy to give us lessons and we were flying the guy's birds and we went for smoothies. And it's like, I'm always going to be a second when she's around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he and I bond best when we're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for Heidi, she's going to need to be alone with Lou. And I think that part of this is really appreciating that.
Yeah.
And I think the second part is being able to admit when you've made a mistake and then correct it without feeling ashamed,
mm-hmm.
without feeling like, oh, I'm a bad mom. And then, you know, it's so hard for people to say sorry. It's so hard for us to admit mistakes. But so much of the time, it's just a lack of information.
It is.
Well, also, you know, I'm not a parent, but every child, it seems to be a case-by-case, you know, basis where they have...
Yes.
You just... It's their own individual needs, and you can read as many books as you want, but you just need to know your child and go through mistakes in order to figure things out.
The cool thing about the books... Here's where the books come in handy, because you'll read 10 books, and they'll all say different things,
mm-hmm.
is to be able to take each one of those 10 things, apply it, and then see
yeah.
which one works best.
Yeah.
For your family. And the date thing, I'll tell you, that's a big deal. And I've gotten that advice before, and it's so important. And oftentimes mm-hmm. these kids can't really be their true selves
mm-hmm.
with the other sibling.
So true.
Because one sibling will always outshine another in a certain way. And so I think it really gives them an opportunity to just be without the competitive aspect of sibling rivalry.
I loved when I had my mom's one-on-one or my dad's one-on-one attention, you know,
because
I had two other siblings and like I just like lit up, you know. I would have been the best only child, but I love that, and I still have memories of that. It's the best thing to have that one-on-one and to feel totally loved and totally paid attention to, and you feel this like freedom that you're not competing, you're not thinking, you're just in your own body and soul, and it's a beautiful thing. So
yeah, that's so interesting, because I was an only child and I hated it, but I also got the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yes.
I didn't get, so we're talking about a middle ground. I was so lonely and it's like this is such an interesting, you know what I mean? It's, I think that balance is key.
Totally.
Well, all right, I'm done. Anything else?
Wow, that was a fast
that was
resolution.
Good. No, that was. That sounds pretty instantaneous.
I'm done.
I'm done with this.
I'm done.
Yeah, I think
But what I like, though, is that you saw
it.
You saw the effect. But you saw the effect of the advice, which I love. I love it when it works out so quickly that it's almost like a vending machine. You get the advice and out pops the new kid's response at the bottom pretty instantly. Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yes, it is. Now I'm done again.
To the runners, the lifters, the weekend warriors, the triathletes, we all know that injuries are quite simply a reality. We want to avoid them as often as possible, but they do happen from time to time. And if you don't want to slow down for ice therapy, get Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps. You've never experienced anything like these things. They are awesome. It's cold therapy that you can use while you're still active. You can run, you can bike, you can lift, and you keep your joints or your muscles wrapped and cool. They stay in place while giving you similar recovery benefits to ice therapy. There's no freezer needed. It fits comfortably. No bulky ice bags. Reusable. Clinically tested. Proven effective. You just put Arctic Ease on and you have targeted instant cold compression therapy where you need it before, during, and after exercise. If it's pain, swelling, injuries, you can safely use Arctic Ease for instant, long-lasting cold compression therapy, even when you're training. So do not put your training on ice. Get reusable Arctic Ease cold wraps at your local retailer or visit arcticease.com and get instant cooling relief when and where you need it. Are we ready?
Rolling.
Okay. So, all right. This segment is about back pain. And here's why I bring it up. Here's what brought the whole thing to my attention. Heidi has horrible, oh my God, poor baby, horrible TMJ.
Oh, me too. You want to hear it?
No.
But that's because I was in a major car accident.
No, so. Girl.
Yeah, it's gross.
I mean, when she, literally, I'll be sitting next to Heidi and she'll be eating and her jaw will do that every bite.
Oh my God.
It's so brutal. And
it's the worst.
It blocks her eustachian tube. She can't hear anything.
I know.
She can't smell. It's crazy.
Anyway,
she goes to see a physical therapist and she's been expert after expert after expert. And it ends up becoming this whole thing about her shoulders being uneven and having a sway back. And then it makes her use the wrong muscles for the wrong things. And then it creates all this tension in her jaw. And I'm not a dumb person. I worked in a physical therapy clinic. I owned one even though I'm not a physical therapist and worked under physical therapists. But talk about holy compensation, Batman. I mean, really, it's crazy how these imbalances can create all these different problems in different parts of the body. I've seen it go to the feet, plantar fasciitis in the feet, all the way up to TMJ in your head or massive headaches. Mm-hmm. And so I had started pulling some stuff about, the physical therapist started talking to Heidi about the way she sleeps and the angle of her head and her neck to keep her spine straight and the way she drives and all this stuff. And so I started pulling articles and Annie goes, Jill, I studied all of this in college. So really what I think I will do is just let the one with a degree maybe address this.
You know what the problem is? The problem really isn't how we're sleeping. It exacerbates how we are during the day. So we have postural habits now that immensely affect how we take ourselves to bed. So for instance, the worst thing to do.
That almost sounded sexy, and then
so sexy. The way you lie in bed is affected by the way you sit.
Then I was like, wait, this is not that.
Take your tight hips to bed, but you take your tight hips to bed because you sit all day and you drive all day. So you're in this posture that looks like Captain Morgan with both legs and your hips get super, super tight and it causes this terrible lordotic curve in your lower back.
Wait, you got to explain that, girl. You mean a sway back.
The booty sticks out. Yep, the booty sticks out and you get like this huge curvature. And so your spine is supposed to look like a subtle S, but now it tends to look like a little bit of an S on the top with the chin sticking really far forward.
Oh my God.
And then a huge S at the very bottom. And so if your hips are super tight, something has to compensate. So they call it compensatory problems from summation of forces. And so all these forces are repetitive. So we are sitting praying mantises. So our chests get super tight. Our shoulders roll forward. The back has to give to be able to allow that tension to happen in our chest. And then we also sit down making our hips super tight. So when we stand up, we look like a praying mantis that's stooped over. And then for women, it's even worse because we have boobs. We drive a car. Mm-hmm. We carry kids. We pick up stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it just all becomes worse. And so those positions that you have during the day that are so injurious, these repetitive habits ergonomically, you take them to bed. Mm. So you lay down, and what do most people do because they're already tight? They lay in a fetal position.
Oh my gosh.
It's not like you're stretching out. So your tight hips are staying tight because you lay on your side, and because you're naturally, there's tension, you're going to go into that tense period, even though like you're resting. So you have to kind of assess what you're doing during the day that creates these problems. Oppose those forces through flexibility mm-hmm. and strength, and then take those habits that you're improving upon into bed. So for instance, if you sit all day, most people know this now, it's common knowledge, you need to take micro breaks. They want you now, a physiotherapist who wrote this one book, it fails me, I'll have to get back to you on it. You have to stand up every hour and a
half.
We're
going to get sued now, Andy, thanks.
Yeah.
Now you're going to use this information, and this physical therapist is going to make himself known. Real quick. Yeah. Plagiarism.
Well, the good news is it's been written in a law.
That's fine. Yeah. I don't settle lawsuits, by the way, just to be clear. I will sue your ass right back.
Go on. The countersuit with your tight hips.
Yeah.
You have to stand up. Good you have one. To stand up every once in a while, and you have to open up your chest. You have to open up your hips, and you have to open up your chest. And it takes nothing for you to stand up. Stretch your hips out a little bit. Stretch your calves out a little bit. There you go. Yes. And then you put your hand up against the wall, and you open up your chest.
Right. I'm doing that right now.
Those things really, really help. When you start going to bed at night, you have to start putting yourself in a position where if you're laying on your back because you need to open up your hips, you take a little bit of a pillow that goes underneath your knees because it raises your hips up the same way you do when you're in a massage therapist and they put the little bolster underneath.
Yes.
And you have to have a thinner pillow so that you're not continuing to protrude your chin forward and allow your body to kind of sink a little bit better. If you do lay on your side, they say to put a pillow between your knees so that the hips are level. And you have to try and change positions. It's really important. If you lay on your stomach, you're supposed to put a very, very light, thin pillow underneath your hips.
I do
so that, there's no sway.
Automatically, because it is, I can't, I'm so uncomfortable
And that's an indication, they say, to how tight your hips are. Wow. If you feel it immediately if you lay prone on your stomach and you don't have a pillow or some kind of bolster softly, even a pillow or a light towel that's thin, that just changes the angle of what they call anterior tilt, the forward motion of the hips has to be leveled out. So the things that you do during the day would start to improve what happens to you in your sleep. It's ergonomics.
It's not necessarily the other way around, as in improve your sleep and it gets better during the day.
I think the studies,
what I mean, yeah, I guess
studies
so.
Show that it's what you do during the day and how you take it to bed at night, because you're only going to exacerbate the problems at night, especially if you're sleeping on your side in a fetal position and your hips are tight and your chest, your pecs are tight, and then you have upper cross syndrome where your chin juts out and then your pecs are tight, your neck is tight, and your back is very loose. And so that's postural. So you're not going to relax in bed if those muscles continue to stay tight, and then you wake up to stand up to sit back down again within minutes.
How do you stay perfect? Like, because
there's you know what, Andy? A physical therapist taught me this. They'll say, sit on the yoga ball or whatever. I can sit on the yoga ball and still slouch.
And still slouch.
I'm that good at it. So one of the things that I remember, this physical therapist rolled up a towel, and she put it. Literally, I sat in a regular chair, and she put it right under my sit bones, and it kept me from rolling my tailbone under and slouching in the chair. It forced me to sit up, and when you sit up, it automatically helps you to pull those shoulders back. Mm-hmm. And another one told me throughout the day to do various stretches, and one of the things that I was working on was pushing my head, like as I was driving, pushing the back of my head into the back of my chair. So I was strengthening the muscles in the back. And ironically, you know, as a typical personal trainer who has a weekend certification, fortunately for me, I've had the tremendous luxury of being able to work with people like Andy and physical therapists. But as a personal trainer, you think, if I do chest, I have to do back. I must strengthen everything equally without looking at an individual and going, where are they overly strong or overly flexible? So you go, I must do chest really, really hard. And I tell, whenever I work out, I'm like, I don't need more chest. I am overdeveloped. My chest is too strong. My shoulders are too strong. My scalenes are too strong. I don't want to do push-ups. I don't need them. I need, close grip pull-downs. I need to be doing rotator cuff stuff.
Right.
I need to be doing all back, strengthen my back. Strengthen all that stuff, and the back of my neck, not the, because the front of my neck, I'm like, ugh.
Yes, and most people suffer that. When you turn them on their side, you don't even need to have a degree to look at the way their body is postured. Most people, you can see what their habitual day is like because they work on a computer, they work on their phone, they drive, they have, you know, a tight chest. And also a tight chest is not a strong chest.
Yeah.
It just means the back has to compensate for it. So to oppose the slouch, you have to do the opposite movement to what you do all day. And they say, like ergonomic studies say, you have probably 12,000 little contractions a day where you do anterior forward motion, but there's no posterior stuff in the back, that kinetic chain that stands you up again. No, and so it's a matter of even having a TheraBand or any kind of rubber band that you have and being able to just pull and activate your back through like little rows. Even to do like seated good mornings activates your lumbar to sit you up. And like Jill suggested, you put a little a pillow or something underneath that forces the hip to lift, and the rest of the tower or the totem pole tends to straighten out. It's really important to do during the day.
What do you think about this? I'm just having an epiphany about something that I do or have done organically. I hate carrying the kids in front of me.
Yeah.
I always put them on my back. I mean, if you're going to carry your kids, I'm sure you would say, well, don't carry your kids. But as moms, we all know you got to get, you know, you got to pick them up.
Well, when you look at a backpacker, you never see them carrying their stuff in the front because it forces you forward. You want to be able to load the back because it allows your glutes and your quads to do the work, opposing the forces in the back of the spine. So if you can carry in the back, that's the best way to do it. And like they say, if you have like a backpack, you know, strap it on both sides so the weight is evenly displaced.
Right.
Those
that's
are
why
really
I carry
important.
A backpack. Never
it's
carry
true.
A purse.
Never carry a purse if you can avoid it because it does, you know, slouch to one side. And then you get uneven hips and shoulders, which is like a totem pole. You know, everything is connected and it does affect, like you said earlier, the feet
boy.
Can affect the jaw.
It's crazy. I mean, my hips, I remember when we were in Ojai. And I was just dying, and you and Christy started pulling
on your legs.
I was like, I'm so much pain, oh my God. And I habitually have this thing where, like, my psoas and my hips, they'll just rotate because I'm super tight on one side. And then it makes the one shoulder higher than the other, and then it causes the neck pain, and then it causes headaches, and then it causes IT band pain for my knee on the other side. It's amazing how this stuff can affect all of these different extremities or all different parts of your body in these crazy ways. And when I started going, all right, I got to pay closer attention to this, it really started to help and make a big difference. So, Andy, we pulled this article, but none of this stuff looks amazing. Any tips for driving? You think they're any good?
I do.
I'm in the car a lot.
Here's one thing that they say. A couple
of the
tips. I
love these. Empty your pocket. Oh, well, empty your pockets.
They don't want the hips to be because they can.
This
you
is
can
a
have
with
a
wallet in the back.
You can have a tilt. Yeah, you can actually have a tilt. And over time, even though the weight is really subtle, it really does make an impact day after day. They say when you load yourself in and out of your car, rather than to take your right leg and load it in and then the other, so you don't put unnecessary weight on one side or the other, you sit your butt down and turn both feet in.
Really?
Yep.
Oh.
And they say you should do that if you're a lady anyways, you know, because it looks more petite and lovely. Pull both legs in. But then you take little micro breaks. For instance, if you use every time you stop at a red light, you sit up and you push your shoulders down and back, retraction, pull your shoulders in, put your fingers behind your head and open your elbows to the side and open up your chest so that you're having little intervals to break the pattern of that tight contraction of all the muscles that cause bad posture, which lead to neck and back pain.
Yeah. And when you said super red important. Light, I had a physical therapist that was trying to train me to bring my my head back. What you do is you pick a color and it's like green. Every time you see something green, it's supposed to be like a reminder.
Oh, I like that
shoulders
cue.
Back.
That's
shoulders,
a good
that's
cue.
A really
shoulders
great
back,
cue.
Neck back. So that helped me a lot.
This is an embarrassing one. Another one told me try to put index finger, middle finger, ring finger, like, and try to put them in your mouth, but bend them, just your knuckles. This is so perverse. Forgive me. I guess I don't really got
how. I my jaw pops when I do
right, because you can't do it. Yeah, and he said,
like 50 shades of physiotherapy.
Yes! But he said, when you're doing the same thing, when you're stopped at a light, I want you to stretch your jaw.
Oh.
And by the way, people look over at you, and I'm just like, hey, it's too famous. Embarrassing.
Yeah, don't
but
do that
it worked.
I'm like, Jillian, don't do that in public, please.
Okay, I won't.
Wow, you, no, I'm impressed. That's
really,
pretty good.
Really, really bad. Why are you stretching your belt?
Because, girl, all these muscles in your jaw
get super tight. They lead to a lot of tension
in
your neck.
Yeah, look at that, sister.
But my dentist just said, don't open your mouth. He told me because he's like,
no,
you will.
He's wrong.
Has he met you?
Yeah.
He's like, don't open your mouth. Because of the clicking from the TMJ, he's like, I'm afraid it's going to get stuck. And then when you try to push it back, it's going to break.
No, all physical therapists will massage those muscles out and stretch them.
My dear dentist.
Yeah, but your dentist isn't a TMJ specialist or a PT.
So you're just saying open it up, let it crack.
Yeah, stretch it. Oh, girl, we got to end on that. I just can't with her anymore. Oh,
good
God.
Luck.
I'm going to go throw up.
Coach, we have Julie on the line for you. Julie, what's your question?
Hello, hey, Julian, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. What's going on?
Well, to drill down to the bedrock of my question, my boss is a complete nightmare, that's putting it nicely.
Okay.
And I should say that I'm not generally one to be afraid of authority figures. I haven't always done well with them, but I've never had a fear of them.
Okay.
But
Stop. What do you mean you haven't always done well with them?
I clash with authority figures, like...
Honey, that's totally different than being afraid of them, but it is a problem in itself. So generally, you have difficulty with authority. Please don't think I'm judging you. So do I. So, okay, great. Go. But okay. So being afraid of them, sweetie, is a totally different thing. My guess, generally, when we have issues with authority, it's because there was somebody in a position of authority over us that didn't handle that responsibility gently, that was tyrannical at one time in our lives, and we've compensated by being like, I'm not afraid of you. I'm going to step up to you. I'm going to fight right back, because we felt so hopeless and so intimidated at times, and this is the compensation issue, which is funny that you coupled this with saying, I'm not afraid at all of authority. So please go on. All right, go on.
So I'm not normally afraid of authority, but this woman, something about her just petrifies me to the point where if I'm leaving the house and I'm leaving to go to work, I'm almost terrified to even open the door and leave. It's not that I'm, you know, a bad employee or that I don't do my work or anything, but it's just the way that I see her interact with other people and the way that she's interacted with me, she just terrifies me, which is a new feeling for me because normally I'm exactly like you said. I'm like, you can't tell me what to do, like, screw off. So okay. I don't know why it is that I'm petrified of this boss in particular.
Okay, first question, do you like the job?
I love the job,
great. So we have an incentive to work this out, perfect, because you're going to need it. You're going to have that incentive to be able to deal with the situation, because without the incentive, you're just going to be like, I can't handle this. So fantastic. We have an incentive. Give me some examples of the interactions that are intimidating to you.
Well, the job is I'm a massage therapist, so I work in a clinic with other therapists. And so some of the interactions I've seen her have with other people, like there was one therapist, for example, who needed to take a day off to go to a funeral. And it was like just all hell broke loose with our boss. And she just accused this coworker of mine of being unprofessional and not caring about the business. And, you know, why couldn't you give me more notice? And we were all like, it's a funeral. No notice.
People just die sometimes. There was no way to know it was going to happen. This is not funny. I'm sorry. It is funny, but it's not funny. I got it. I understand. Okay, yes. So she's arbitrary is what you're saying?
Yes.
She's arbitrary. She's aggressive?
Yes.
Okay. She's arbitrary. She's aggressive. What else?
She seems to really not care about any of us that are working there, and, you know, just that
selfish.
Life happens sometimes, and she's not flexible at all. Like, okay.
She's selfish and insensitive.
Yes.
Great. Here we go. Ready?
Yeah.
Who else in your life is arbitrary, aggressive, selfish, and insensitive?
Oh, geez. I think, well, My mom has been at times.
Ta-da! Okay. So this is why you're so afraid of her, sweetie. So tell me a little bit about that.
It's tough to, you know, to dig back that far because my mom and I have a really good relationship at this point, but more, I think, because I've learned how to deal with her.
Okay. And how do you deal with her?
I sort of drew a boundary a few years ago, and I said, you know, I'm an adult now. You don't get to have the say that you used to have. Mm-hmm. And I just set up the boundary and actually took like your advice off of one of your podcasts. You were talking to somebody once about drawing the boundary there, and if they don't respect it, you just kind of you have to walk away. And so I learned to do that, even though it was difficult, and now we have a better relationship now. But when I was younger, it was a lot more of, you know, nothing I did was the way that she thought I should do it, and she always had a better answer no matter what it was.
So it sounds like with your mom, because you were able to set these boundaries, mm-hmm. it made you feel safe, it made you feel in control, and it made the relationship feel manageable. Mm-hmm. But with this woman, she does have some control over you. It sounds like she has the ability to fire you from a job you love in an environment that other than her, you would also love, your coworkers and so on. And so I think this is why you're so terrified, if that makes any sense.
Because there's, yeah, that makes sense.
There's, first of all, it's historical. It's bringing you back most likely to a place in your life where you felt helpless, which is a horrible feeling. A horrible feeling. And there's a threat. There's something significant on the line, not just something you love, but also your livelihood, which is on a very primal level connected to your survival. So, sweetie, when you wonder why you're so scared, I can't imagine that you wouldn't be scared.
Mm-hmm.
Does that at all? I just want you to understand how you're feeling right now before we talk about how to manage it.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. It's just been baffling to me as to, like, this. I've been there for 7 months now, and I've not been able to kind of figure out what it is about her. But, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, so now we've got a problem because you're dealing with a woman that's irrational. And clearly, I find it highly unlikely that you would be able to go to this individual and say, I think you're being arbitrary, aggressive, selfish, insensitive, and irrational. And she would go, gosh, let me think about that. Maybe I am. Highly unlikely. And with individuals like this, have you tried, I'm just curious if you've engaged in this behavior. It doesn't sound like you have. But have you tried, like, pleasing her at all? Have you gotten into any of that?
I did give it a shot for a little while, and it just kind of, it didn't seem to really make a dent because it's kind of, it just seems to go with whatever her moods are.
Good. I'm glad that you stopped, because that'd be the worst thing you can do, because you would never be able to please her or fix the situation or help her. And the end result is that you would get that much more demoralized, to be fair, and feel that much more helpless, and it would start to affect the way you feel about yourself, because it would be, why am I not able to please her? And the good news here is that I think you're able to see this has nothing to do with you and nothing to do with your coworkers. It is about her.
Mm-hmm.
So the great part about that is it's not affecting you thinking, oh, I'm not a good therapist, or I'm not a good employee, or I'm not. And that's wonderful. That's very healthy of you. Now, we still have our problem of you being at the mercy of this irrational woman. Does this woman have a boss, or is she the boss boss?
She is the owner of the clinic.
Damn it. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. All right. So I hate to tell you this. Here's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I would I'd do two things, because we've all worked for people like this. You want to fly below the radar. You want to be off this woman's radar. So, you know, when we're dealing with people that are not stable, the best thing to do is not engage. Not get in her crosshairs. This mm-hmm. is no way to live. And it's on a daily basis. And we're not going to be able to remove her from the environment. So what I want you to do is stay under the radar. mm-hmm. try to stay off her whole situation, just be pleasant and as sort of non-engaging, just hello, good morning, smile, leave. Try not to engage whatsoever because she's going to constantly look for somebody to vent on. That's what this woman is doing. She's projecting all of her rage and her frustration, which, by the way, we don't care about why she is the way she is. That's not your job. We want you not to be the brunt of it.
Right.
So in the meantime, while you're trying to dodge these bullets that she's spitting out on a daily basis, and when this woman is going to need to, you know, let the top off the steamer, so to speak, and let some of that hostility out, we want you out of harm's way. And yeah. the way to do that is just, again, just lay low, do your job, try not to get on the radar for better or for worse. And I want you to, honey, I want you to start looking for another job.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't. There's no other piece of advice. We can't change her. We can't keep you safe from her moods. And, you know, now that we understand what this is about, that's great. But then what we need to do is put you in an environment, since you aren't able to protect yourself from her being arbitrary and firing you, we need to put you in an environment where you are safe.
Right.
And it's like, is it wrong? Sure. Is her behavior bad? Could you pursue it legally if she fired you? Maybe. But that would take a ton of time, and it would be... It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And I want you to just, on the DL, I want you to start interviewing at other spas, at other clinics, for other physical therapists, other sports medicine facilities. I want you to start cultivating your own personal business so that people can, because one of the things I did when I worked at a gym, you want to know the truth? So I was a personal trainer. Then I did it from 17 to 24, got in the entertainment industry, hated life, got out of the entertainment industry, not by choice, but thank God, at 27. And then got back into training because I didn't know what to do with myself. Started working at a sports medicine facility for a man who was an a-hole, just like the person you're describing.
Right.
And I was like, I don't understand this. I built this business. I brought all these people in. And, you know, I'm so valuable, blah, 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 blah. I don't understand why he treats me this way. Here's what I did. I very quietly put together a business plan. I literally got a group of angel investors. It took 2 years, a year and a half, actually, for me to do it. In the meantime, I moved my whole clientele over to another facility while I was opening up my own facility. And then I ended up opening my own sports medicine facility. And I just very quietly took all the clientele that I had built and established rapport with. And a lot of personal trainers do this. They've started a gym, and they'll make $20 an hour while the gym's charging $150 for the session with them. And then they'll build a rapport with their clients and they'll say, hey, we're going to go to this personal training gym. You can pay me $75 an hour, save $25. And instead of making $20, they're now making $75. And they leave that environment.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? So I want you to start looking for other opportunities, and I want you to start cultivating your own business. And you're going to, this is might be that opportunity, sweetie, where you think about opening up your own spa. You never know what these things can lead to. In the meantime, you fly under the radar while you're putting together a plan and building a bridge. Don't try to fix her. Don't try to understand her. You understand yourself. Now you do. We know this is a very unhealthy place for you to be. Get out of there as soon as you financially can.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Sometimes these things can be, you know, blessings in disguise.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. I mean, I tried sticking it out. Like, she was kind of like this from the beginning, and I thought, well, maybe I just have to, you know, get used to it and get used to her. But it's, you know, 7 months, it's not really improving at all, so.
No. No.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. No, no.
Yeah.
You know what to do. I want you to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not urgent. There's not, you're not fired.
Right.
You got time. You take a deep breath. And quietly go about your business. Be smart about this.
Right.
Okay?
Well, thank you so much.
All right, sweetie. You got this. Don't be scared.
Yeah.
You got this. You can do this.
Can I just tell you quickly? I'll keep this short, I know. But so I have to tell you the reason that I got into massage therapy. A few years ago when you first started your podcast, I listened religiously. And I started, you know, figuring out that I was unhappy doing what I was doing, which wasn't massage at the time. And I kind of argued with myself back and forth, like, oh, well, it pays good money, so just deal with it. And the more I listened to your podcast and the more that I studied Unlimited, I think I've read that thing like 5 or 6 times. And then finally I just said, you know, I'm not happy doing this. And I gave it all up, and it was a huge leap of faith, and then I went back to school, and now I have a career that I really love, and I just wanted to thank you for, like, you know, the lessons that you impart.
Thank you, honey.
All of us. So,
see, and if you've been through that, this will be a breeze. Now we just need to find you an environment where you love doing it.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And I can't tell you how much. Really, you're sneezing during my heartfelt moment, Andy? A little professionalism, please. Just, I mean, a modicum of professionalism. I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. It's all good.
All right, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We want an update, please. Email us and let us know how it's going.
Okay, sure, I will.
All right, kiddo. Hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
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 You know, sometimes... Honestly, again?
Oh, God.
What's going on?
What the heck?
Your nose runs a lot when you're pregnant, you know.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's just unacceptable.
I know. You can't poop, but you can have every other orifice drain.
Oh, wow.
Sorry about that.
Geez.
TMI.
I was trying to...
Yeah.
Well, I don't...
See, okay. Another reason I'm not getting pregnant.
It's fun. There's other really cool things.
Really?
Yeah. Look at a little alien crawling underneath. I have a squirrel in my shirt.
I can do without that.
Okay. Well, I think we're done here. I'm just... All right.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.